This is Kurt Benrud for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and welcome to another edition of Did You Know?
This is Para Tolson. This program's designed for a print and visually impaired audience.
And this is Bob Martin.
I've been reading about how St. Patrick drove all the snakes out of Ireland.
You mean the folk story of when St. Patrick preached from the top of a hill and then proceeded to drive all the snakes out of the country? He ran them into a sea and gone forever, right?
Well, that was one version of the story. Another is that when St. Patrick approached the snakes, he was carrying his staff, which was serpentine in shape, and it was real big.
So, the snake saw St. Patrick's staff and thought it was a bigger snake, and so they ran away from it.
Yeah. He basically told them, "My stick's bigger than yours." I'd run away too. I wouldn't mess with a guy who had a bigger stick than I did.
Especially if he were speaking softly.
And where did the snakes go?
All the way to England.
Did you know there is another version of the story?
And where does this story come from, Kurt?
According to Frank Delaney, from the history of the Shankhi. They were a part of Irish tradition from hundreds of years ago and still existent in the 1950s, where a traveler, often just called the storyteller, would come around through small country villages and, for a few days' hospitality, he would regale the neighborhood residents with tales about Ireland's history and folklore. He would tell stories about great battles of the ancient past and how certain customs came to be. And he even had a story about the way the snakes left the old sod.
Okay, tell me.
And pray tell, what of me hospitality?
I just happen to have some corned beef and cabbage.
And to wash it down with, my lad?
Some Guinness stew?
Ah, 'tis fine.
'Tis indeed. Let the tale begin.
One time, long ago, after St. Patrick had visited with the people, a man named Gara spoke to him. South of here, about 3 days' travelling at a comfortable pace, you'll see ahead of you a big flat mountain. That'll be the most important place you'll ever come to in all of Ireland.
Why so?
Now, all of the people there at the time knew exactly which mountain Gara meant. It was about 25 miles north as the crow flies, near the town of Templemore. And the mountain rises alone out of the plain, with no other hill near it.
Well, why is that so important?
Don't get ahead of the story. Now, on this side of the mountain stands a cave. And in that cave, if I understand my new faith, lives a great force of evil.
Oh, and who might that be?
Well, whoever it was, he'd been living there some time. And he makes all kinds of mischief.
Like murder and thievery and assault.
And, shall we say, difficulties with the ladies. And so forth.
I'll bet he also made bad liquor, and he cheated at gambling, and slaughtered animals at night, and destroyed crops in the field.
Alas, 'tis so.
Oh, no. It must have
been. Aye.
But he'd flee before the will of God, right?
'Tis so. So off St. Patrick went toward the mountain.
With the people following.
When St. Patrick arrived at the cave, he had no idea what the devil might look like, since the devil could be changing shapes. And he had no idea how powerful Satan might be. And he had no idea what he might be able to do to drive this foul demon out of Ireland. But St. Patrick had learned to trust a power greater than himself, from way back when he was first brought to Ireland as a slave. So he knew he could succeed now as well.
So he made his way toward the cave.
And as he approached, the ground got rockier and rockier. Ah, I think 'tis now the time.
That he meets the snakes?
That you might refresh the glass of Guinness. Things are about to become mighty scary.
Oh, right.
Ah, thank you. And sure enough, it was about then that he heard a strange sound coming from just about knee level at his left knee.
The snake?
'Tis so.
How big was it?
5 feet and 5 inches around. And it was spitting green bile at St. Patrick.
What did he do?
St. Patrick jumped aside and then brought down his staff on the serpent's head and spun him around his staff and then reached down and grasped the beast by the back of the head.
Being careful not to get bit.
And began twirling it around his head and then flung it through the air. The snake looked like a piece of black rope flipping through the sky until it came crashing down, head first, onto a rock, which broke its head wide open.
Ah, oh, and that was...
Not the end of the snakes. For there in the rocks, close to St. Patrick's right knee, was another snake, equally round and equally long. He darted at the dear saint's right leg and also spit green bile at him. But again the blessed Patrick jumped aside, then grasped that snake and began spinning him even faster and faster until he loosed him far away. The snake looked like a black circle, spinning round, till he landed even farther away, but in a different direction.
And was it also killed?
No, it wasn't. But it didn't stick around to battle St. Patrick again. He slithered away, scuttling across the countryside, headed for the part of Wexford, where he snuck aboard a ship leaving Ireland. And he warned all the other snakes to never go back, because it was much, much too dangerous. And so it was from that day onward. There have been no snakes in all of Ireland.
Wow!
But what about the evil inside the cave? St. Patrick couldn't just walk away and leave that.
No, indeed. But that's another story.
Oh, a bit more corned beef and cabbage?
And a bit more Guinness?
Ah, which we just happen to have enough time for. When Patrick stepped to the mouth of the cave, it was so dark that he couldn't see a thing. But a terrible, putrid smell issued from the depths of the cavern, and a voice crackled out.
I know who you are.
Aye, and I know who ye are.
But you have only one name, while I have so many, and all of them are exciting.
Ah, but I only need one, for I have nothing to hide.
In that case, I pity you. Life is more interesting my way.
Of what use are you?
I give people enjoyment.
I give them hope.
They prefer what I offer. They take so much of it.
And with that, St. Patrick strode into the cave.
You listen. Your God claims to be merciful, but also claims to be just. He cannot be both. To be merciful, he must not be just, and to be just, he sometimes cannot be merciful. What is your answer to that, O man?
Now, you all know that St. Patrick had left behind a famous work called The Breastplate. It is a cross between a hymn and a poem, and it is those words that he spoke now. I rise this day through heaven's strength, lit by the sun, bathed by the moon, glorified by fire. I have the speed of lightning. I am as swift as the wind. I am as deep as the sea. I am as stable as the earth. I am as firm as stone. Out! Come out! Go! You cause nothing but trouble. Well?
A bit more hospitality, sir. Please, go on.
Where was I? Ah, yes. At that point, the cave went dark as coal. There was a dark orange light glowing, and there appeared what can now only be described as a shapeless shape.
I used to have one of those that lived in my closet when I was a kid. Oh, they're scary.
Patrick called out. I call up all of God's power between me and the forces of evil. And right then, this shapeless thing got bigger and bigger and surged past St. Patrick and out of the cave.
And St. Patrick chased it, right?
Running faster than anyone would have thought possible for an old man. And he was gaining on the devil, and he reached out and grabbed the devil by the tail.
And spun him around his head?
No. The tail was burning hot, like grabbing a burning iron from the forge of a blacksmith. And he had to let go. But the devil was desperate to get away. And as he got to the top of the mountain, he bit a big hunk out of it and carried it away in his mouth. And to this day, that bit of mountain is called Devil's Bit.
Did St. Patrick catch up with the devil?
No. After burning his hand, he lost his advantage and the devil got away.
Where did he go?
Oh, well, he paused to catch his breath at Cashel, where he dropped the rock from his mouth. That rock became the Rock of Cashel, the most famous site in Ireland. Then the devil made his way off to the port of Waterford, where he changed his shape to that of a gentleman, and set sail for England, where he resides to this very day. And whenever there is trouble between England and Ireland, you know who it is that be stirring it up. Ah, thank you for the hospitality.
And all of that really happened?
Well, there really is a Devil's Bit Mountain, and there really is a Rock of Cashel. And then there really were traveling storytellers who told stories just like this to village people in Ireland for hundreds of years. But the problem between Ireland and England can be traced to the Acts of Parliament, like the penal laws of 1660 to 1693 that tried to force Roman Catholics to accept the new Anglican Church.
And although it makes great folklore for why there are no snakes in Ireland outside of the zoos, Ireland is an island, and many times in its prehistory, the country was covered with layers of ice, which effectively eliminated snakes, who are cold-blooded, and adapt body temperature to their environment.
Which means any snakes that might have come to Ireland before the Ice Age would have froze to death, and after the ice melted, good luck swimming there in the salt water. Besides that, if you're a villager who doesn't get much outside entertainment, and a storyteller passes through and you gather about fire with your neighbors...
Don't forget the hospitality.
Of course not. The hospitality is essential. What story would you rather hear to pass the time?
St. Patrick did it.
'Tis so.
I have a story to tell you now.
Another of your true stories?
Oh, ye of little faith. Now, this one really happened.
Methinks thou dost protest too much, but, go ahead.
After the snakes left Ireland, they visited a few other places.
For instance?
New York City. They were invited to participate in the annual St. Patrick's Day parade.
Oh, Bob, they were not.
Now, just wait a minute. Times have changed since they got thrown out of Ireland, and some people thought they had gotten a bum rap and sort of wanted to, you know, make it up to them, a little reparation. And so the invitation.
Maybe they deserve the reputation.
Now just listen to their story. After being thrown out of Ireland, they found that they weren't welcome in a lot of places, and that made them very sad and depressed. They were feeling very low.
I mean, what do you suspect? They started out on the ground. That's about as low as you can get.
It was even worse. They got so sad that their eyelids fell off.
Bob!
Don't interrupt! Something had to be done. So one snake, Simon S. Snake Esquire, wrote a letter to the mayor of New York and told him of their problem. The mayor was very understanding. Then Simon held a rally for all the other snakes and gave them this message. All right, guys, it's time to suck it up. We know there's a lot of people out there who don't like us. They try to blame us for everything from the downturn in the economy to the fall of the whole human race. But just think, where would they be if we hadn't been there to help Moses get the people out of underneath Pharaoh's thumb? They'd still be back in Egypt building pyramids. So, their loss. Now, here's the plan. I received an invitation from the mayor of New York City to march, slither, in the St. Patrick's Day parade. We are going to make this the greatest parade ever held.
You think nobody's going to object to all this?
Well, the snakes knew there would be people like you waiting to nitpick at them, so they set some very stringent guidelines for their behavior while at the parade.
This ought to be good.
Now, Para, hear him out.
You'll see. They are trying to turn over a new leaf.
Oh, was it a fig leaf?
What? Well, I don't know. Would that make a difference?
Go on.
So, here's the situation. You'll all have little green hats and shamrock lapel pins and shillelaghs. Don't mix with others wearing the same attire. That means absolutely no alcohol on the parade route. Also, if you get hungry and must snack, don't eat the shamrocks. Remember, stomach pumping doesn't work on you guys. So dry your tears, pack your bags, and get ready to party, party, party!
One question, Bob. Why would they want to slither all the way down Fifth Avenue? The pavement is hot.
It would be an opportunity to satisfy their curiosity. Being that low to the ground, they have an excellent view, so when they pass by the grandstand, they'll be able to look up the bagpipers' kilts. Oh, I see what you mean. faith in Megora? Briefs, boxers, or fig leaves?
You know something, Bob? You may have something here.
Para, you didn't believe that nonsense, did you?
Well, I was reading a study from a zoologist who said that they discovered that snakes may be extinct by the year 2050.
And this is a real scientific study?
It cost the government $1 million to complete the study, so it must be real. You know how the government is with money. Anyway, they concluded that without snakes, the world would be a much more dreary place. The Raiders of the Lost Ark would not have been nearly as interesting. Several James Bond movies would never have been made. Snake charmers would be unemployed. And mongooses would be extinct.
I think that's mongooses.
It's not gooses.
But it's not meese either.
Well, they'd still be extinct. And besides that, snakes don't just kill things. They also create jobs.
Like what?
Wildlife photographers and documentary makers.
You see, Kurt, the St. Patty's Day Parade gave them the incentive to keep on living.
All right, I can play this game. I read another study that cost $2 million and was run by the Upper Division of Lower Arkansas University. It showed that juvenile snakes in the Bible Belt were less likely to attend church than their parents.
Well, you see what a liberal education will do to them?
Older snakes often had important roles as ministerial assistants, or at least as disturbing visual aids. But now, only 15% of snakes under 2 years of age describe themselves as fundamentalist believers.
What of the rest of them?
They claimed they had a greater world view, thanks mostly to the Internet.
What kind of things were they interested in?
Oh, more lucrative endeavors like video game developers or door-to-door financial planners or even used car salesmen.
And all because St. Patrick drove them out of Ireland?
I think it's time to stop all this. It's just getting silly.
Very. Bob, the story of St. Patrick is just folklore. There never have been snakes in Ireland, as we explained earlier.
And there's no snakes in a New York City parade, or making jobs for outdoor photographers, or being less religious than their parents.
Snakes are just a very intricate part of nature.
That sounds like an introduction to some more historical snake notes.
Probably the worst bad rap for snakes within the Christian tradition comes from the book of Genesis, where the serpent, supposedly, is the cause of the temptation that gets Adam and Eve thrown out of the Garden of Eden. Bad snake. But in the next book, when Moses is trying to get the Egyptian pharaoh to release the Hebrew slaves, he turns his staff into a serpent in order to prove the power of God. Good snake.
And in the book of Numbers, Moses made a snake out of copper and placed it on a pole. If anyone who happened to have been bitten by a real snake would look upon the symbol, he would live.
And in the later Gospel of John, it said that, just as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, so must the Son of Man be lifted up, so that you will not perish but have eternal life. So, the snake isn't all bad.
Did you know that the ancient Aztecs worshipped the snake? Quetzalcoatl was the plumed serpent, and they believed it to be the master of life.
Did you know the Aborigines in Australia believed the giant rainbow serpent was the creator of life?
Did you know that some African cultures worshipped the rock python, and killing a python was considered a very serious crime?
That some Native Americans believed that the serpent was to be revered as being the protector of fertility.
That the ancient Greek god Asclepius was thought to be a healer of the sick. He would come in a dream or send one of his servants, a snake. One touch of the forked tongue was thought to produce a cure.
Did you know that the Asclepian snake is a part of the present-day symbol which represents physicians and veterinarians?
How about some snake bell ringers? Snake scales are made of a substance called keratin, which is the same thing that makes up our fingernails.
A mother python coils herself around her eggs and makes her body shiver in order to heat herself up and keep the eggs warm until they hatch.
The biggest snake is the reticulated python. It can grow up to 33 feet long. The Pittsburgh Zoo once housed a python that was captured in Thailand in 1948. It grew to a length of 28 and a half feet, 37 and a half inches around, and weighed in at 320 pounds.
The thickest snake is the anaconda. One was found that measured 45 inches around.
The smallest snake is a thread snake. It is only 4 inches long and the size of a toothpick.
Vine snakes are remarkable because they seem to have binocular vision.
Many zookeepers believe that cobras are faster learners than other snakes. They can tell the difference between their trainers and strangers.
The hog-nosed grass snake and the spitting cobra can fake death. When they feel threatened, they roll over on their backs and let their tongues hang out. They also excrete a really smelly substance from the anal gland.
I can see why if some other predator came along, he sure wouldn't want to stick around and eat that. Would you want to sit around a campfire and eat a skunk while you bask in the atmosphere? I think not.
We also have some misconceptions about snakes. The death adder has a sting in its tail. Nope, it's the fangs at the other end.
Snakes hypnotize their prey. No thanks to Walt Disney in The Jungle Book. Remember Ka's eyes going round and round while he wrapped around Mowgli?
Snakes can milk cows. They have no mechanism to achieve that ability.
Tiger snakes chase people. And if you kill one of a pair of tiger snakes, the other one will hunt you down in revenge.
The hoop snake in Australia takes his tail in its mouth and goes rolling merrily along.
Snakes have to coil before they strike. They don't.
Snakes move very quickly. Most snakes are lucky to reach 6 miles per hour.
Most snakes are poisonous. No, only about 10% of all snakes carry venom.
Rattlesnakes grow another button every year. No, they gain a button every time they shed their skin, and that could be more than once a year. And in the wild, a button often becomes detached, so counting buttons on a rattlesnake will not necessarily give you an accurate age of the snake.
But one thing that is true is that the Greek writer, Aesop, used the snake on several occasions to teach a moral. Here are three examples. The laborer and the snake. A snake, having made his hole close to the porch of a cottage, inflicted a mortal bite on the cottager's infant son. Grieving over his loss, the father resolved to kill the snake. The next day, when it came out of its hole for food, he took up its axe, but swinging too hastily, missed its head and cut off only the end of its tail. After some time, the cottager, afraid that the snake would bite him also, endeavored to make peace and placed some bread and salt in the hole. The snake, slightly hissing, said, "There can henceforth be no peace between us, for whenever I see you, I shall remember the loss of my tail, and whenever you see me, you will be thinking of the death of your son." The moral is, no one truly forgets injuries in the presence of him who caused the injury.
The farmer and the snake. One winter, a farmer found a snake stiff and frozen with cold. He had compassion on it, and taking it up, placed it in his bosom. The warmth quickly revived the snake, and resuming its natural instincts, bit its benefactor, inflicting on him a mortal wound. "Oh!" cried the farmer with his last breath. "I am rightly served for pitying a scoundrel." The moral is, the greatest kindness will not bind the ungrateful.
The eagle and the serpent. An eagle swooped down upon a serpent and seized it in his talons with the intention of carrying it off and devouring it. But the serpent was too quick for him and had its coils around him in a moment. And then there ensued a life-and-death struggle between the two. A countryman, who was a witness of the encounter, came to the assistance of the eagle and succeeded in freeing him from the serpent and enabling him to escape. In revenge, the serpent spat some of his poison into the man's drinking horn. Heated with his exertions, the man was about to slake his thirst with a draught from the horn, when the eagle knocked it out of his hand and spilled its contents upon the ground. The moral is, one good turn deserves another.
Well, Bob, what do you think so far about snakes?
It's a good thing that Aesop didn't meet St. Patrick. He'd have driven all the snakes out of the fables, and then there would be no morals left in the world.
Sorry I asked.
I have a question, Kurt. What about snakes right here in North Carolina?
Now, that's a good question. There are 37 different varieties of snakes in North Carolina.
And how many of them are poisonous?
Only 6. The copperhead, the cottonmouth, the eastern diamondback, the timber rattlesnake, the pygmy rattlesnake, and the coral snake.
What if I should get bit by a poisonous snake? What should I do?
There are some simple suggestions that are made. 1. Try to stay calm. 2. Get to the nearest hospital as soon as possible. And 3. Try to identify the snake, but don't put yourself at risk or waste time getting to the doctor.
When I was in the Scouts many years ago, they used to tell you that you take a knife and cut some X's over the fang marks and then suck out the poison. Is that still the case?
Absolutely not. Do not cut open a victim of a snake bite.
Also, do not apply a restrictive tourniquet.
Or use a stun gun or electric shock.
Do not freeze or apply extreme cold to the wound.
Do not eat or drink anything, especially alcohol.
And don't pretend nothing happened and just keep on running around.
Back to rule 1. Stay calm. Get medical attention as soon as possible.
What if it were not a poisonous snake that bit me?
You could just teach it a lesson and bite it back.
Para, don't tell him that. He'll do it.
Why not? When I was a little kid, I once bit another kid and my dad bit me. I learned quickly not to bite. Why wouldn't that work with a snake?
Because then he'd fake it and roll over on his back and let his tongue hang out and make a bad stink all over you.
Oh, well, that's a good reason.
No, my no. Bob, don't bite the snake back. Most non-poisonous snake bites are harmless. Just clean the area of the bite frequently with soap and water, and you should be all right.
You know, getting bitten by a snake got me thinking.
Yes?
Do you think that snakes ever had legs?
Why would getting bitten by a snake make you wonder if snakes ever had legs, Bob?
Because if they had legs, they could run faster, and I would have gotten bitten more often.
But you didn't get bitten.
Lucky they don't have legs now, isn't it? But do you think that once they might have?
Well, there are a couple of explanations. Suppose Para and I give them to you, and then you can decide which one is more reasonable.
Oh, boy! Maybe I can get St. Patrick to help me decide.
The first comes from fictionalized Greek mythology, courtesy of the flutist. Many years ago in the land of Crete, nestled at the base of Mount Ida, lived a race of serpents. Now, these were not just ordinary serpents. They had legs. Long, strong, beautiful legs.
Now the queen of this clan of serpents was Serpentina, and she believed that she was the fastest runner in the whole world. She even boasted that she could outrun the god Hermes, who was the messenger of the gods because of his quickness.
Hermes had a soft spot in his heart for the serpents because one of his symbols was the caduceus, which consisted of 2 snakes wrapped around a winged staff.
So imagine his irritation when he heard of Serpentina's boast. To put it mildly, he was royally aggravated.
Oh, that's putting it mildly.
He made up his mind to go down from Mount Olympus and have a few words with the uppity queen.
When Artemis heard of this, she was displeased and tried to talk to Hermes. She told him that all the animals were sacred and that as gods they were to protect the animals, not injure them.
But Hermes was not to be put off. The nerve of this serpent to claim that she was faster than he, who wore wings on his sandals. No siree, this was not going to be unchallenged.
He formed a plan. He would go down disguised as an old man in rags, and then challenge her to a race, which he did.
A challenge which she readily accepted, all the while laughing to herself about the nerve of this old man in rags thinking he could beat her in a race, and then promptly set a date for the race.
When the appointed time arrived, all of the snake clan was gathered along the race course while the gods peered down, anxiously, from Mount Olympus. With a great cheer arising from the gathered serpents, the race began.
Serpentina immediately took the lead with the old man in rags laboring behind, seemingly trying to keep up. And this is how things continued through most of the race.
But with the end in view, Hermes dropped his cloak of rags and streaked across the finish line and then stood there glaring at the beaten Serpentina.
When the defeated queen and all of the rest of the serpent clan saw it was the god Hermes that she had challenged, they were deeply embarrassed, and Serpentina fell down on her knees and tried to apologize to the god.
But he was not to be so easily satisfied. He had been disrespected by this mere mortal, and so in punishment he sentenced her and all her clan to spend the rest of their days without legs. And there was nothing that the snakes could do, as they felt their legs melt out from under them.
After Hermes left, Artemis came down and told the serpents that she was sorry for what had happened, but there was nothing she could do about their lost limbs. But there was one thing she could do, and that was she gave them ability to slither quickly through the grass and so escape from any dangers they might encounter. The end.
I don't know about that. Let me hear the other story.
This version is from scientific study. Since the skeleton of the snake shows vestigial limbs, it's reasonable to assume that at one time they did have legs. What happened next is open to discussion.
One view is that the original snakes were much like modern lizards, but as their lifestyle developed, more along the lines of underground burrowing, they eventually lost not only legs, but also eardrums. They simply just got in the way.
That's right. Legs are great for above ground. They're not so good on the ground, and especially so under the ground. And the same for ears. Snakes sense vibration, and they test the atmosphere with their tongues. They can't actually hear sound.
And over the course of time, attributes that are necessary for survival are accentuated, and things that make survival more difficult are lost.
A slightly different view suggests that snakes originally came from the sea and found their bodies could also adapt to dry land, so they came out.
When you look at a snake, you can see there's a lot that would make it adaptable to living in water.
So whatever its origins, one if by land and two if by sea, the creature eventually lost legs and eardrums and goes merrily slithering along the ground and under the ground, helping people by keeping the rodent population down, among other things.
So, there you are, Bob. What do you think is the best explanation for why the snake lost his legs?
Well, I don't trust in science that much. Scientists are always trying to prove something to people who already know what's best. So I think the story with Hermes is true.
They lost their legs because of a race?
Of course, but maybe not completely.
What do you mean, not completely?
The leftover legs in their skeletons? Maybe they're not completely gone. If a snake has to get somewhere in a really big hurry, maybe the legs pop out and help the snake along until it's out of trouble.
Like when?
Like when St. Patrick was driving out of Ireland. If some dude is running around with a great big shillelagh whacking the bejabers out of you, you want to get out of there in a hurry. So with St. Patrick wailing away, up pop the little legs. He runs all the way to Wexford, where he gets on the boat, and sails away happily. Then, the legs pop back in again. So, you see, Hermes. That's the explanation.
I think we need some bell ringers. Did you know the first coin to feature the face of a president was the 1909 Lincoln penny?
Did you know that the only tree from which we eat the flower is the fig?
Did you know there are 9 muscles in your ear?
That 1 out of every 12 Americans alphabetized their spice rack.
That technically a female dude is a dudine.
That the 52 cards in a deck represent the 52 weeks in the year, and the 4 suits represent the 4 seasons.
That the ideolocator on a map is the part that says, you are here.
That the smell of Crayola crayons is one of the 20 most recognizable scents to American adults and is so soothing that it has been shown to lower blood pressure.
That Play-Doh was originally formulated as a compound to clean wallpaper.
That Lincoln logs were invented by John Lloyd Wright, the son of architect Frank Lloyd Wright. He got the idea from watching the technique his father used while building the Imperial Hotel in Tokyo.
That the address of the Cramdens on the Honeymooners, 328 Chauncey Street, was the actual address of Jackie Gleason's childhood home.
That many TV commercials would show clocks set the hands in such a way to draw attention to the brand name or logo of the clock.
That the old 3-note chime that announced, NBC. They are actually the notes GEC, the company's original owner, General Electric Corporation.
That there is only one current TV program that does not have a theme song, 60 Minutes, is announced by a ticking clock.
That the Sesame Street characters Bert and Ernie are believed to be named after Bert the cop and Ernie the taxi driver from It's a Wonderful Life.
That an unbelievably rude waiter at Oscar's Tavern in New York may have been the inspiration for Oscar the Grouch.
That ketchup was once sold as a medicine.
And did you know that some states have state reptiles? North Carolina does.
You mean besides a state bird and a state flower, North Carolina also has a recognized state snake?
Not a state snake, but a state reptile. It's the eastern box turtle.
But there are some states that do recognize snakes. Arizona has the Arizona ridge-nosed rattlesnake. Massachusetts has the garter snake. Ohio has the northern black racer, and West Virginia has the timber rattlesnake.
And Tennessee also recognizes the eastern box turtle, along with North Carolina.
Are vipers different from snakes?
Vipers generally just refer to snakes which are venomous.
And pit vipers are poisonous snakes that live in pits, like in Indiana Jones?
Makes for scary movies, but pit vipers are not so named because of where they live. They get the title because they have a heat-sensing organ located in a small pit, just below their eyes and over their nostrils.
Snakes and dragons also have become important in legend and folklore. Tiamat, in ancient Babylonian mythology, was the mother of life. Tiamat was a primordial sea dragon and the embodiment of chaos, who was the mother of the first gods.
Vlad was a Hungarian duke who received the award of the dragon, the Dracul. His son was known as the son of Dracul, or Dracula.
The Chinese year of the snake began in February of 2013, and the Chinese lore says that one born in this year has a good temper, communicates well, has a gracious morality, and a tremendous sympathy for others.
Medusa was one of the Gorgons of ancient Greek mythology, who had a head full of poisonous serpents instead of hair. If you looked upon the face of Medusa, you were turned to stone.
The constellation Draco is the constellation of the dragon. It was believed that Draco was slain by the goddess Minerva and then thrown into the sky upon his defeat.
The story of Orpheus is remembered because of his descent into the underworld and try to bring back his wife Eurydice. But it's not always known that Eurydice was killed as she was trying to fend off a satyr and fell into a pit of vipers.
Were they pit vipers?
Could have been, but remember, they are not pit vipers because they are in a pit. They are pit vipers because of the heat-sensing organ.
And there was a Native American tribe that was called the Snake Indians. They were better known as Shoshones, which means snake.
And so did the Snake River, also, I guess. The river was in their territory.
Yes, it was, but the river wasn't named after the tribe. It had several names before it finally became the Snake River.
It was earlier called the Lewis River after explorers Lewis and Clark, and finally became the Snake River because of a misinterpretation.
A later group of explorers asked the Indians about the river, and the Indians made a waving motion with their hand, indicating the salmon that swam up the river. The explorers thought they were indicating a snake, and so the name.
Remember from back in the math class from the name Pythagoras? Well, he didn't have anything to do with snakes, but his name meant Market of Pythons.
And how about Monty Python's Flying Circus?
Interesting question, Bob. A flying circus was a name for traveling, barnstorming events, and the Monty Python part has an unclear origin. One claim is that Monty came from the nickname given to Field Marshal Montgomery from World War II. And the python was added as describing a slippery character.
Another version was that Monty was the name of a rather rotund character that frequented a pub where Eric Idle hung out. The man would walk in and ask, "Has Monty been here yet?"
In the end, the BBC said it was the perfect name for a slimy theatrical agent.
The name became permanent when the BBC said they thought it was a silly name, and so the group threatened to change their name every week. And the name stuck.
And now for something completely different.
Well, maybe not so completely different. Some stories from folklore and fiction about snakes. The first two come from the Brothers Grimm, and they refer to the snake as a paddock. There was once a little child whose mother gave her every afternoon a small bowl of milk and bread, and the child seated herself in the yard with it. But when she began to eat, a snake, here called a paddock, came creeping out of a crevice in the wall, dipped its little head in the dish, and ate with her. The child took pleasure in this, and when she was sitting there with her little dish, and the paddock did not come at once, she cried,
"Oh, paddock, paddock, come swiftly hither come, thou tiny thing. Thou shalt have thy crumbs of bread. Thou shalt refresh thyself with milk." Then the paddock came in haste, and enjoyed its food. It even showed gratitude, for it brought the child all kinds of pretty things from its hidden treasures, bright stones, pearls, and golden playthings.
The paddock, however, drank only the milk, and left the bread crumbs alone. Then one day the child took its little spoon and struck the paddock gently on its head and said, "Eat the bread crumbs as well, little thing."
The mother, who was standing in the kitchen, heard the child talking to someone, and when she saw that she was striking a paddock with her spoon, ran out with a log of wood and killed the good little creature.
From that time forth a change came over the child. As long as the paddock had eaten with her, she had grown tall and strong. But now she lost her pretty rosy cheeks and wasted away.
And the next tale from the Brothers Grimm. An orphan child was sitting by the town walls spinning, when she saw a paddock coming out of a hole down in the wall. Swiftly she spread out beside it one of the silk blue handkerchiefs for which paddocks have a strong liking, and which are the only things they will creep on. As soon as the paddock saw it, it went back, then returned, bringing with it a small golden crown, laid it down on the handkerchief, and then went away.
The girl took up the crown, which glittered of a delicate golden filigree. It was not long before the paddock came back for a second time, but when it did not see the crown any more, it crept up to the wall, and its grief smote its little head against it as long as it had strength to do so, until at last it lay there dead.
If the girl had left the crown where it was, the paddock would certainly have brought still more of its treasures out of the hole.
And now from Native American tradition, the great snake. The rain had passed. The moon looked down from a clear sky, and the bushes and dead grass smelled wet after the heavy storm. A cottontail ran into a clump of wild rose bushes near War Eagle's lodge, and some dogs were close behind the frightened animal as he gained cover.
Little Buffalo Calf threw a stone into the bushes, scaring the rabbit from his hiding place, and away went the bunny, followed by the yelping pack. He stood and listened until the noise of the chase died away, and then went into the lodge.
You have seen many snakes, I suppose?
Yes, I have seen a great many. In the summer, I see them every day.
Well, once there was only one snake in the whole world, and he was a big one, I tell you. He was pretty to look at, and was painted with all the colors we know. This snake was proud of his clothes, and had a wicked heart.
This big snake used to crawl up a high hill and watch the moon in the sky. He was in love with her, and she knew it, but she paid no attention to him. She liked his looks, for his clothes were fine, and he always slick and smooth. This went on for a long time, but she never talked to him at all. The snake thought maybe the hill wasn't high enough, so he found a higher one and watched the moon pass from the top. Every night he climbed this hill high and motioned to her. She began to pay more attention to the big snake, and one morning early she loafed at her work a little and spoke to him. He was flattered, and so was she, because he said many nice things to her. But she went on to the sun's lodge and left the snake.
The next morning, very early, she saw the snake again, and this time she stopped a long time, so long that the sun had started out from the lodge before she reached home. He wondered what kept her so long, and became suspicious of the snake. He made up his mind to watch and try to catch them together.
So every morning the sun left the lodge a little earlier than before. And one morning, just as he climbed a mountain, he saw the big snake talking to the moon. That made him angry, and you can't blame him, because his wife was spending her time loafing with the snake. She ran away, ran to the sun's lodge, and left the snake on the hill.
In no time, the sun had grabbed him. My, the sun was angry. The big snake begged and promised never to speak to the moon again, but the sun had him, and he smashed him into 1,000 little pieces, all of them different colors from the different parts of his painted body. The little pieces each turned into a little snake, just as you see them now. But they were all too small for the moon to notice after that. That is how so many snakes came into the world, and that is why they are all small nowadays.
Did you know there's another tribe that has a legend involving serpents? It is the Chippewas, and this story might sound a little familiar at the end, The Serpent and the Great Flood.
One day, Nana Bozo, who was a hero to the Chippewa people, returned to his lodge after a long journey. He called to his young cousin, but he heard no answer. Then he saw on the sand the trail of the great serpent and knew that his cousin had been seized by the enemy.
Nana Bozo picked up his bow and arrows and followed the track of the serpent. He passed the great river, climbed mountains, and crossed over valleys until he came to the shores of the deep and gloomy lake that is now called Lake of Spirits.
Nana Bozo could see at the bottom of the lake the house of the great serpent and his followers. Then he spoke to the sun, "Shine over the lake, make the water boil." You see, this would force the great serpent to seek the cool shade of the trees that were growing on the shores of the lake.
He then took his bow and arrows and waited. The sun shot hot rays from a cloudless sky, and in time the water boiled and the hot waves dashed against the rocks on its banks. Soon the great serpent came slowly to the surface of the water and moved toward the shore.
Nana Bozo watched until the great serpent was asleep under the shade of a tree. Then he soundly drew an arrow from his quiver, placed it in his bow, and aimed it at the heart of the great serpent. With a howl, the great serpent awoke and plunged into the water.
He knew that he would die from his wound, but he was determined to destroy Nana Bozo. He caused the water of the lake to swell upward and to pound against the shore. Madly, the flood rolled over the land, carrying with it rocks and trees.
Nana Bozo, fleeing before the angry waters, ran through the villages, shouting, "Run to the mountaintops! The great serpent is angry and is flooding the earth! Run! Run!" Nana Bozo continued his flight up a high mountain, far to the north.
There he gathered together timber and made a raft. Upon it, the men and women and animals with him placed themselves. Almost immediately, the mountaintop disappeared from their view.
They floated along on the face of the waters for many days. At long last, the flood began to subside, and the people on the raft saw the mountains and hills, then the plains and the valleys.
When the water disappeared from the land, the people who survived learned that the great serpent was dead, and that his companions had returned to the bottom of the Lake of Spirits. There they remain to this day. For fear of Nana Bozo, they have never dared to come forth again.
Wow! You know, that sounds an awful lot like St. Patrick and Noah.
Aye, 'tis so. Now a story from African-American tradition, much like the old Uncle Remus stories. The Possum's Dilemma. Back in the days when the animals could talk, there lived old Br'er Possum. He was a fine feller. Why, he never liked to see no critters in trouble. He was always helping out, a-doing something for others.
Every night, Br'er Possum climbed to a persimmon tree, hung by his tail, and slept there all night. And each morning, he climbed out of a tree and walked down the road to sun himself. One morning, as he walked round the road, he come to a big hole in the middle of the road.
Now, like I said, old Br'er Possum was kind and gentle, but he was also nosy, so he went over to the hole and looked in. All at once, he stepped back, 'cause layin' in the bottom of that hole was old Br'er Snake, with a brick on his back. Br'er Possum said to himself,
"I best get out of here, 'cause old Br'er Snake is mean and evil and low down, and if I get to stand around him, I'm just might get bitten me."
So Br'er Possum went on down the road, but Br'er Snake had seen Br'er Possum, and he commenced a calling for him.
Help me, Br'er Possum.
Br'er Possum stopped and turned round. He said to himself,
That's old Br'er Snake a-calling me. What you reckon he wants?
Again, like I said, old Br'er Possum was kind-hearted. So he went back down the road to the hole, stood at the edge, and looked down at Br'er Snake.
Was that you a-calling me? What you want?
Br'er Snake looked up and said,
I've been down here in this hole for a mighty long time with this brick on my back. Won't you help get it off me?
Br'er Possum thought,
Now listen here, Br'er Snake. I knows you. You mean and evil and low down. And if I was to get down that hole and giffin' and liffin', that brickin' off your back, you wouldn't do nothing but bite me.
Old Br'er Snake just hissed.
Maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe not.
I ain't sure about you at all. I just don't know. You're going to have let me think about it.
So old Br'er Possum thought. He thought high and he thought low. And just as he was thinking, he looked up into a tree and saw a dead limb hanging down. He climbed onto the tree, broke off the limb, and with that old stick, pushed that brick off of Br'er Snake's back. Then he took off down the road. Now Br'er Possum thought he was away from old Br'er Snake when all at once he heard something.
Help me, Br'er Possum.
Oh, no, that's him again.
But being so kind-hearted, Br'er Possum turned round, went back to the hole, and stood at the edge.
Br'er Snake, was that you calling me? What you don't want now?
Old Br'er Snake looked up out of that hole and hissed.
I've been down here for a mighty long time, and I've gotten a little weak, and the sides of this old hole are too slick for me to climb. Do you think you could lift me out of here?
Br'er Possum thought.
Now, just wait a minute. If I was to get down in that hole and lift you out of there, you wouldn't do nothing but bite me.
Maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe not.
I just don't know. You're going to have to give me some time to think about this.
So old Br'er Possum thought, and as he thought, he just happened to look down in that hole and see that old dead limb. So he pushed the limb underneath old Br'er Snake and lifted him out of the hole, way up in the air, and throwed him into the high grass. Then Br'er Possum took off a-running down the road. Well, he thought he was away from old Br'er Snake when all at once he heard something hollering.
Help me, Br'er Possum!
That's him again!
But being so kind-hearted, he turned round, went back to the hole, and stood there a-looking for Br'er Snake. Br'er Snake crawled out of the high grass just as slow as he could, stretched himself out across the road, reared up, and looked at old Br'er Possum.
I've been down there in that old hole for a mighty long time, and I've gotten a little cold 'cause the sun didn't shine. Do you think you could put me in your pocket and get me warm?
Now, you listen here, Br'er Snake. I knows you. You mean and evil and low down. And if I put you in my pocket, you wouldn't do nothing but bite me.
Maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe not.
No siree, Br'er Snake. I knows you. I just ain't gonna do it.
But just as Br'er Possum was a-talking to Br'er Snake, he happened to get a real good look at him. He was a-layin' there looking so pitiful, and Br'er Possum's great big old heart began to feel sorry for old Br'er Snake.
All right, you mustn't be cold. So just this once, I'm gonna put you in my pocket.
So old Br'er Snake coiled up just as little as he could, and Br'er Possum picked him up and put him in his pocket. Br'er Snake laid quiet and still, so quiet and still that Br'er Possum even forgot that he was a-carrying him around. But all of a sudden, Br'er Snake commenced a-crawling out, and he turned and faced Br'er Possum and hissed.
I am going to bite you.
Now, wait a minute. Why are you going to bite me? I done took that brick off your back. I got you out of that hole. I put you in my pocket to get you warm. Why are you going to bite me?
You knew I was a snake before you put me in your pocket.
So the moral of this story is,
when you're minding your own business and you spot trouble, don't ever trouble trouble till trouble troubles you.
The next story is of a different kind. Eileen Leaf of the Folklore Archives said in 1986,
Rumors are such funny things that they are actually told as true stories.
Here's the background. Unofficial records say that more than 1,000 Estonian boys were sent to the Afghanistan Civil War with the Soviet Army in 1979 to 1989. One of the boys was serving as a cook's helper there. He would gather all the garbage and food scraps and take them somewhere into a ravine near the kitchen where the snakes lived.
And these snakes got to be quite friendly with the boy, for they were used to the boy bringing food to them every day. But one night, a big snake comes out of the ravine, coils itself around the boy, and won't let him go. The boy was scared stiff.
The snake does not kill him, but won't let him go. And the boy is there in the snake's grip for the whole night, and his hair turned white for fear. And in the morning, when the sun rises, the snake finally lets the boy go.
The boy hurries back to his unit and finds all the others had been killed that night. They had had their throats cut, and he was the only one who survived. They say that the boy's back home now, and his hair is all white.
So, the snake saved his life.
Not bad for an animal often looked down upon.
We can't leave the snakes without a story of them helping in winning a Darwin Award. The first comes from Cyprus in 1991. A hunter encountered a snake and attempted to subdue him by taking the butt of his gun and pressing it down on the head of a snake.
The snake responded by entwining its tail up the stock of the gun until it reached the trigger and discharged the gun.
Snake lives, hunter doesn't.
And the next story could have happened any time and anywhere where you hear the phrase,
Hey, hold my beer and watch this.
A feller was down at his favorite fishing hole when some other fishermen passed by.
One of them calls out, How you doing here?
Not so bad, except these dang worms I'm using keep biting me.
About an hour later, they return and find the fella dead. Seems the worms he was using were baby copperheads.
Well, that's about all our storytelling for this program. Anything else?
Yeah. I wonder if St. Patrick ever visited Iceland.
Why?
Because there's no snakes in Iceland either.
This is Kurt Benrud for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and thank you for listening in to another edition of Did You Know?
This is Par Tolleson. This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience.
We would like to thank WRAL.com, a part of the Capital Broadcasting Company's Raleigh-based New Media Group, for their support.
If any of you might be able to help underwrite any of the programming of TRRS, please contact us at 919-832-5138.
And this is Bob Martin. Until next time,
goodbye.